Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is January 28th, 2018, and this is the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, episode 152. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're going to be knocking out our new backlog so that next week we can do a very exciting focus episode. So please be excited. In the meantime, Slaggy, if you'd like to get us started on our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits.
Yes, Sega announced on the Sonic the Hedgehog Twitter that the Super Sonic DLC is going to be free forever. As you might have remembered...
For Sonic Forces?
Yes, for Sonic Forces, yes. As you might have remembered, it was originally planned to just be a limited free DLC, and then would eventually cost $1.99 in that equivalent worldwide. I guess they realized that people were not having that, and also that the game's kind of a hot mess, so it will be free forever.
Have you played Sonic Forces yet?
I watched you play it, and I mean, it's, you know, Sonic Adventure 1 and 2 were okay, but I've never been a fan of this style of Sonic game, so...
Yeah, I did know that about you. Well, we also have an interesting follow-up here. We have word that Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is going to be getting patch 1.3.0 in February. This is really exciting, you know. They're going to be doing some bug fixes regarding missing blades that can occur in Chapter 7. But even more exciting is that they're adding a New Game Plus mode called Advanced New Game. We don't yet know what exactly that's going to entail, but given the collectible focus of Xenoblade Chronicles 2, a lot of people are very excited that this may create additional opportunities to fill out your blade list. Slaggy, what do you think about this?
That's cool. I'm glad to see that they're supporting that game.
Excellent.
We have a collaboration going on right now with Monster Hunter World and Horizon Zero Dawn. And you can get a special appearance for your Palico, and as well as some armor and a bow for your hunter as well. So you can, you know, channel some Horizon Zero Dawn realness.
Excellent.
You have to do a 5-star quest called Wild Teachings. You need to be hero rank 6 or higher, hunter rank. I'm thinking of another news story we have later. And you need to take out 8 Barnos.
Which is a wing drake species, but that's easily done enough, so this is really exciting stuff. Slaggy, are you playing Monster Hunter World yet?
No, I have to wait until payday to pick this one up, but I will try to get this fierce-looking armor.
Yeah.
And Palico armor.
Excellent. We also have word here of a collaboration costume set for Monster Hunter World as a crossover from Street Fighter V Arcade Edition. These are skins for Ryu and Sakura, and perhaps more excitingly to a lot of the Monster Hunter fan base, while the costumes will be free in-game, there are gestures that you can buy. One is a Shoryuken and one is a Hadouken, and both, when you have them equipped with these skins, actually are like damaging abilities. So they're basically ways to turn these costume skins into almost like alternate playable characters.
That's which, cute.
Yeah, the fandom's actually surprisingly into. What do you think, Saigi?
Just too bad it's not Hot Ryu, Daddy Ryu.
Alright. And keeping the crossover fun going, we also have word that Street Fighter V Arcade Edition, and obviously those of us who are still hanging out on old Street Fighter V with just the Arcade Edition update, will be getting Monster Hunter World collaboration costumes as well. These are specifically for Ken, Armika, and Ibuki. The costumes will be available through the extra battle mode, which will be available next month for the Monster Hunter World crossover costumes. I guess the current extra battle mode is for a Beautiful Joe costume for Rashid.
Oh, wow.
Right? But basically, Ken is getting Rathalos armor, Armika is getting Zenogre armor, and Ibuki is getting Kirin armor. This is, of course, very exciting, and I imagine quite a few of all of us will be trying to do these extra battles to get these costumes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Kingdom Fighters 14 is not getting any Monster Hunter crossovers yet, but they are getting 4 more DLC fighters.
That's awesome.
We know that one of them will be Oswald as a returning character, and then also Najd, the character who was part of the design contest.
Excellent. Najd looks so rad. Oswald, of course, fan favorite. So this is...
Congratulations, this is... fan favorite.
Right? This is exciting because if you think back when King of Fighters 14 was first announced and first shown, it was kind of a laughing stock. You know, it looked really ugly. The gameplay looked solid but needed a little work. But they've really, SNK's put in the work to turn that into a great product with a long life that I think has been really rewarding for fans. I think that SNK deserves big ups for the work they've put in on this. We also have word here that there is going to be a new Xenogears soundtrack release.
Oh, you almost got people wetting their panties right there.
Well, this is called the Xenogears Original Soundtrack Revival Disc, The First and the Last. It's going to be releasing in Japan on April 4th, and it will include some MP3 files of all of the songs on the discs, because this will be released on a Blu-ray disc, so that you can easily transfer those to your computer. We also, of course, have word that there's, in April as well in Japan, going to be a 20th anniversary Xenogears concert. So it seems like there's been a lot of focus on Xenogears lately.
Well, it is going to be celebrating its 20th anniversary.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll do anything else for it.
You have to wonder. Well, we have a Soul Calibur 6 trailer, which shows some returning characters, Nightmare Jean-Qua. I'm sorry, I don't know that character's name. And Kilik, I don't know if I'm saying that right as well. But there's also a new character, Gro, which I'm assuming I'm saying correctly.
Yeah, I think so. So this new trailer is kind of wild. First off, a lot of people have noted that, you know, while Soul Calibur is typically like an ancient history type setting game, Gro almost looks like a time-traveling robot. So people are really questioning what these characters mean for Soul Calibur 6's story, especially since toward the end of the new trailer, we get a tease that the Soul Calibur may be coming under the ownership of Kalik and giving us a nightmare form of Kalik, very similar to the relationship between Nightmare and Siegfried in older Soul Calibur games.
Interesting.
So yeah, definitely some interesting stuff going on there for Soul Calibur fans. We will continue to report on this game as we hear more about it.
We have a Nintendo Switch exclusive character for Crypt of the Necrodancer. This is going to be Reaper. Reaper, as you guessed, is kind of a Reaper. Reaper will be able to recruit souls of defeated enemies, and they will be offensive and defensive, but any damage they take will erase them, so they can kind of be like a shield to buffer you.
Interesting.
And you'll be able to pick up Crypt of the Necrodancer Nintendo Switch Edition on February 1st, so pretty soon.
Excellent. I can't wait. I will definitely pick that up. We also have word here with an incredible new Final Fantasy VI trailer. Final Fantasy VI. Final Fantasy 14 trailer. This is for patch 4.2. That patch is going to be called Rise of a New Sun, and the new teaser for it heavily teases a lot of the Final Fantasy VI content that will be present in that patch, including a tease at what looks like an encounter against Kefka. This is, of course, very exciting news. I know that I still play Final Fantasy 14, just not terribly often. Sidekick, where are you at on 14 at the moment?
I've just been working on leveling up some other jobs and kind of just waiting for this patch to go live. They're doing some changes for the way housing works, so hopefully getting a free company house for us. I love that this Kefka is very it, Pennywise.
Yes.
You use Magitek too.
Wow. We also have word here that the upcoming Boku no Hero Academia game for PS4 and Nintendo Switch will feature All Might as a playable character. This is, of course, One's Justice. It will be releasing in North America and Europe for PS4, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, and PC in 2018. In Japan, it's just PS4 and Switch, also 2018. So far, we also know that the playable characters in this game will include Tomura Shigaraki-san, Katsugi Bakugo-san, and Izuki Midoriya-san. So please look forward to it.
Zaddy's here.
We also have word coming out of Nintendo that the Nintendo Selects library has added a couple more games. On February 5th, A Link Between Worlds, Legend of Zelda, Super Mario 3D Land, and Ultimate NES Remix will all be available at retail for $19.99. Of course, these being Nintendo games, any price drop is noteworthy, and so it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, this is great. Some great games. Link Between Worlds was a treat.
Absolutely.
Border Break. Oh, sorry. You had something else to say about that?
No, I was actually going to go into the next story, but you can take it.
Well, Border Break is getting a PS4 beta starting on February 3rd. It will last from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. Japanese Standard Time on February 3rd and 4th, and then again on February 17th and 18th. So you'll have to do the time zone conversions because I'm not good with that. This, of course, is for the free-to-play title, so...
Indeed. If you're interested, you can download the beta app and play it through your Japanese PlayStation Network account. We also have the exciting confirmation of Scribblenauts Showdown. This is going to be released on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One on March 6th. That's very soon.
Yeah.
We also have a bunch of other interesting release date updates. Dissidia Final Fantasy Omnia Opera will be releasing in the iOS store in English on January 30th, 2018. Considering I had recently been complaining about it looking like we were never getting that game, I feel happy.
Yes.
We also have word that Legend of Heroes Trails of Cold Steel will be releasing on PC on February 14th. Yume Nikki Dream Diary will be releasing on February 23rd. That is, of course, in Japan. It'll be available on PC. And it is an enhanced remake/sequel to the original. Very, very exciting stuff here. The new God of War will be releasing on April 20th, 2018. Full Metal Panic Fight Who Dares Wins will be releasing in Asia on May 31st with English subtitles. I know that there are a lot of people who are really into Full Metal Panic. If you want to play one of their games in English, now is the time. SteamWorld Dig will be releasing on the Nintendo Switch on February 1st. The Witch and the Hundred Knight 2 will be releasing in the West on March 27th, 2018, and in Europe on March 30th. Shin Megami Tensei Strange Journey Redux will be releasing on May 15th, 2018 in North America and Europe on May 18th. Night in the Woods will be releasing on the Nintendo Switch on February 1st, 2018. Final Fantasy XV Windows Edition will be releasing on March 6th. Final Fantasy XV Royal Edition will be releasing on the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, also on March 6th. And this is interesting because it actually features an all-new dungeon in addition to the rest of the game. That is the Insomnia City Ruins expanded map. It will also include a new first-person mode, new gear, and new bosses, including, you know, like bonus boss content.
Huh.
A new Armiger Unleashed mode that will open up a new action RPG style of gameplay after the Armiger is completely unlocked, when you have collected all 13 royal arms. The Royal Vessel, which is the boat from Final Fantasy XV, will now be a fully controllable and exploration-based vehicle. It will also allow you to explore on your own the entire body of water between Cape Kayem and Altissa. This set will also include all of the Season Pass content, Episode Gladiolus, Episode Prompto, the multiplayer expansion Comrades, and Episode Ignis. It will also include all of the pre-order and side DLC content, you know, all of the weapons, the Regalia car skins, the various item sets. For those of you who don't want to buy another copy of Final Fantasy XV outright, you will be able to get the new content from the Royal Edition as far as new game modes, new features, new bosses, new dungeon, as the Final Fantasy XV Royal Pack DLC for $20, releasing on the same day. Slykick, what do you think of all this? This is actually kind of like a lot, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty big package. Whoa.
As the kids say, that's what she said. And last but certainly not least, we have word here that Pillars of Eternity 2 will be releasing on PC, Mac, and Linux on April 3rd. With all of that having been said, Slykick, unless you have anything else, I think it's time for some news.
It's time for some news.
News. News. News. Oh my god, news.
All right, so we have word that New Gundam Breaker, which is not New Gundam Breaker, it's New Gundam Breaker, will be coming to the Americas and Europe this year. So,
and you may recall last episode we talked about how there was an upcoming set of Gundam-related video game announcements. New Gundam Breaker is one of the games that was announced at that event. It is going to be the newest game in the Gundam Breaker series. Continue.
Yeah, so it's the build-and-break gameplay that you've come to love, possibly. It's being built on Unreal Engine 4, so that's cool. Only PS4 as a console for now.
Yeah, of course, you know, these games are super fun as far as, like, their customization battle system goes. The new game is apparently going to have a real-time permutation of that, so that'll be very interesting to see. It'll be releasing this year in Japan, Asia, the Americas, and Europe. Please look forward to it. We also have word that SD Gundam G Generation Genesis will be releasing on Nintendo Switch in Japan. It'll be releasing there on April 26th, and it will feature all of the DLC from the PS4 and PS Vita versions of the game, and first print copies of the game will come with a voucher code for a downloadable version of the Super Famicom title Super Gashapon World SD Gundam X.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of a lot. We also have word that Nippon Ichi Software has announced an HD remake of Disgaea, Hour of Darkness, to celebrate that game's 15th anniversary.
Oh, wow.
We don't yet have any gameplay footage of it, but Nippon Ichi confirmed that the current target for release window is summer 2018. We don't yet have any announced platforms, but if I had to guess, I would say PS4 and Switch.
Nippon Ichi also has announced a project called Project Nightmare, which is designed as a horror-adventure game using live-action footage. Basically, Nippon Ichi is saying that at this point, 3D graphics are so realistic that if you're going to go this far, just use live-action footage already.
What? That's a shame.
So we'll have to keep our eyes peeled for that.
Yeah, it looks nice and creepy, so I definitely can't wait to see more. We also have an announcement coming out of Nippon Ichi Software for a new title called The Liar Princess and the Blind Prince. This is a really interesting looking game. It has a very interesting art style going for it. It was apparently designed by a female web designer employee of Nippon Ichi Software. Sort of the look is based on, like, sort of like child book illustrations. I think it looks really cool and unique. Very interested in hearing more about this. It will be revealed at a later date. We don't yet have any news on platform or release date, but if I had to guess, I would say PS4 and Switch.
Yeah.
We also have word here of a new Dragon Ball Z game. This is going to be a PC game for web browsers. It is a 4v4 cross adventure called Dragon Ball Z Cross Keepers. And Keepers is spelled with a Z. This appears to be a thing now, right? Like,
yeah.
Between this and Fighters, like, I guess the Dragon Ball franchise just uses a Z now. I'm still really excited, though. I love Dragon Ball games. I love, like, any game that has, like, crossover elements where, like, you get to do, like, combination attacks and stuff, which is what this game is all about. Like, that appeals to me. I'll definitely be interested in keeping up on the news on this one. What about you, Slaggy? Do you have any interest in a Japanese browser-based game?
Maybe.
That sounded like a no, and that's okay.
Well, something I will definitely be here for is the Legendary Pokemon Celebration happening between February and November. Depending on whether you have Sun and Moon, or Sun and Ultra Sun, or Moon and Ultra Moon, you'll be able to get one of two legendaries each month. Starting in February will be Dialga and Palkia from Diamond and Pearl, and throughout the year you'll be able to get very much many legendaries.
Very much many legendaries. What are the other legendaries that are going to be offered throughout the year?
Okay, March has Heatran and Regigigas. April is Entei or Raikou. May is Xerneas or Yveltal. June just lists a shiny Zygarde, so I guess that's for either version. July is Thundurus or Tornadus. August is Groudon or Kyogre. September, Latias or Latios. October, Reshiram or Zekrom. And November, Ho-Oh or Lugia. So please look forward to it.
Excellent. We also have news here of a new game from the Tomorrow Corporation, probably best known as the studio behind Little Inferno. It is a follow-up to their surprise success, Human Resource Machine. This is called 7 Billion Humans, which is basically looking like the next level of puzzle game from Human Resource Machine, which was obviously about a bunch of people crammed into a massive office to solve strange puzzles. It was very weird. This game also looks very weird. It doesn't yet have a release date, but I'm hoping soon because Human Resource Machine is super silly and fun.
Yeah. And now for Lol-taku. It's Totaku. So basically, Sony is putting out some figures that have some of their famous characters, but like not even really like theirs. Because, for example, there's Kratos, which you know is them, but then there's Heihachi from Tekken, the Hunter from Bloodborne, the Phasar FX350 from Wipeout, Sackboy from Little Big Planet, Parappa the Rapper from Parappa the Rapper, and Crash Bandicoot from Crash Bandicoot.
I feel like only half of those are even Sony characters.
Yeah. These will apparently be available through ThinkGeek, which apparently ThinkGeek is owned by GameStop now? When did that happen?
We talked about it like 2 years on this show.
Maybe I just blocked it out of my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually over at Union Square in San Francisco, the GameStop there, they actually have an entire basement that is literally a ThinkGeek store. It's super rad, and I'm actually like really excited for these to release on March 23rd. Like, I'll probably go to that store just to pick up that Parappa the Rapper one because I'm worried it'll be kind of like short shipped.
Yeah,
what about you? Any of these you gonna buy?
I mean, they're cool, but they don't do anything. Like, they look like amiibo, but they don't have amiibo functionality, so...
They're also the same price as amiibo.
Yeah, and I guess, like, you can link up the bases so they can all, like, stand together?
Well, whatever. You're a hater, bitch. I'm definitely gonna be buying the Bloodborne Hunter and Parappa the Rapper.
I like how Kotaku says that the Totaku of Parappa looks like someone hot glued an eraser to part of a pencil case.
I mean, they're not wrong, so... Let's move on to our Culture Club. Culture Club, of course, is where we talk about some more current stories that, you know, maybe aren't quite about the games themselves, but more about the industry and the culture surrounding games. This first one is one that's exciting for a lot of people. We have word that Crystal Dynamics, which is a Bay Area studio, probably best known now as a Square Enix subsidiary, has actually added a lot of very noteworthy talent for their upcoming Avengers game that is currently known as the Avengers Project. You know, they've been picking up people from studios such as Naughty Dog, Visceral Games, Monolith, Sledgehammer Games. Basically, people are just really excited for this Avengers game. In particular, picking up people from Naughty Dog who were involved in Uncharted The Lost Legacy. What's your take, Slaggy?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this turns out. I mean, it sounds like they've got a good roster of talent that they're bringing on, and it'll be interesting to see them get to spread their wings a little bit. I mean, they've just been the Tomb Raider studio for basically the past 10 years at this point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Maybe even a little, probably even a little longer than that. So definitely very excited to see what these folks over there can do when they get to spread their wings a little. Although I feel bad because they're just going to end up trapped in another franchise. Like, this isn't a Soul Reaver reboot. What are you all doing? Obviously, I know the market realities. Like, they can't just decide what project they want to do, but that's sucks. We also have word here, and this is interesting. There's been a lot of controversy about BlazBlue Crosstag Battle, where basically Arc System Works revealed that about half of the 40-character roster was going to be paid DLC, and the game was going to be released as more of like a budget or bargain game. Typically, in Japan, games release for the U.S. equivalent of, you know, $70 to $80. This is going to be releasing at more like $52 to $54. And their idea, I guess, was sort of that people could buy it at that price, and then if they bought all the DLC characters, they would ultimately end up spending that about $80 price. Which, when I actually stop and think about it, to me is very interesting. I think that, you know, these kinds of variable pricing structures could potentially be a good thing. But, you know, obviously some people are taking it to a very negative place, and they have every right to do so. This game's going to be releasing in Japan on PS4, Nintendo Switch, PC, and Steam, obviously, in Japan, May 31st, North America, June 5th. So I'd like to hear from you. How do you feel about this pricing structure?
I mean, we've seen similar things happen with, like, Killer Instinct and, you know, its season pass. And although Killer Instinct was free, right?
That's correct.
So, I mean, but you only got, like, one character or something, right? If you got it for free.
Yeah, and then there was, like, a rotation free. And, they evolved that whole thing for a while.
I don't know. I mean, I think if it ends up that, you know, if you don't really care about a huge roster and you just want to play it for fun, then having a cheaper entry point. I mean, if it ends up being about the same as you would pay for any other sort of fighting game these days.
Well, and it looks like the game without the DLC stuff is going to have about 20 characters.
Which is still decent.
Which is, yeah, it's a little low, but for a budget game, I actually think is acceptable. I don't know, you know, this is something we've talked about a lot, and we've sort of revisited the topic with the loot box controversy recently, and that's basically that games cost more to make than they're making a lot of the time, unless they're these AAA games with guaranteed sales. And so I think that it really behooves a publisher to look at alternative ways to ensure that they recoup their costs and find a good balance with which to coexist with the consumers that they're trying to sell to. It's interesting in this case because the director has actually more recently than this. This was just announced a few days ago, maybe 4 days ago, and just in the last day or two, the director has followed up saying, you know, that they've heard the feedback and they will be taking a look at what they can do to make sure that this stays equitable for the fan base, which I think is really great, but I hope they don't throw this whole plan out because I actually do think there are a lot of people who could be convinced to pick up a budget game and then invest more if they get a lot out of it. So maybe for a game like this, maybe that's not a bad plan.
Yeah, I mean, one of the main complaints I've heard around this is that, even when the game price drops or you buy it used, that having the rest of the roster be purchasable is guarantees revenue going directly to them. So, yeah, you know, that is a point.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me to be too upset about this, personally. Like, I think it's a good plan. Again, though, this could be one of those things where, very similar to the loot box controversy, which I used to think was okay, and now I don't. Maybe my opinion on this will change as I read more about it. But on the face of it, this seems like a fair compromise to me.
Yeah.
We also have word here that Panic Button Studios will be responsible for bringing Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus, to Nintendo Switch. This is, of course, very exciting, as Panic Button brought over Rocket League to the Switch. They brought over Doom to the Switch, both performing at a very competent level. That's just exciting news. What do you think, Slaggy?
Yeah, because I heard those ports were really well done.
Excellent. Do you want to take this next one? It's kind of an intersection of two of your different interests.
Yeah, so we have word that Yuji Naka, who you probably know best as the creator of Sonic the Hedgehog, has joined Square Enix.
What?
Yeah, we don't really know anything else at this point. He is arguably a visionary. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do. A lot of people feel that since Naka-san left Sonic Team, that, you know, it was already starting to go downhill, but that, you know, it's never really fully recovered. So let's see what magic he works at Square Enix.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does over there. I'm looking forward to it. We also have word that Ys 8, Lacrimosa of Dana, has been delayed again from its PC release, which was supposed to take place on January 30th alongside the localization update of the PS4 and PS Vita versions, but Nipponichi Software has announced that it has been delayed to an undetermined date. At this point, they are making offers for refunds of pre-purchasers on Steam. As far as we know, the localization update for the PS4 and PS Vita versions won't be affected. They'll still release on that January 30th launch date. This is a very weird situation, but it does sound like Nipponichi is doing everything they can. We will keep you posted.
Apparently, Blizzard is now monitoring YouTube for toxic Overwatch players.
I'll believe that when I see it. What do you think about this? You know, they claim that they're going to be proactively seeking out users on YouTube, for example, and looking for instances of people, like, showing off, like, their, like, really shitty behavior in-game, and that they're going to be taking steps to, like, issue bans based on even those kinds of things. What do you think? Like, are they really going to do this? Is it going to work?
I don't know.
Is it going to make the game better?
It's really hard to tell. I mean, you know, you also have the whole Ugandan Knuckles Overwatch League bullshit going on, too. So, like, Overwatch fandom is just kind of a shit show. I mean, not really the fandom, but, you know, a lot of the player base can be a shit show. I mean, you know, for anything really. But, yeah, I guess like you, I'll believe it when I see it.
All right. We also have word here that the Epic Games fan favorite Paragon is going to be closing permanently on April 26th. Epic is not only shutting down the game, but they're actually going to be offering full refunds to every player who spent any amount of money in the game. This is, of course, kind of a big deal. Obviously, these MOBAs popped up at a pretty astounding rate over the last few years, and we've talked about the closures of quite a few of them, but most of them have not gone the full rebate route, and in fact, most of them never actually found the moderate success that Paragon found. Unfortunately, Epic Games currently has an enormous success on their hands with the unexpected hit Fortnite. So it would seem that Fortnite is taking up enough company resources that it's no longer worth putting any work in on Paragon. What do you think about this, Slaggy? It doesn't seem that Epic, you know, anyone is losing jobs or anything. That's a positive, but people are losing a game that they liked, but also not losing any money. So it's kind of a nuanced situation.
Yeah.
What's your take?
I mean, the MOBA arena, so to speak, kind of was starting to get a little crowded. I know a lot of people enjoyed Paragon, but, you know, unfortunately these things happen.
Yep, absolutely. Definitely sucks. We also have word here that Twitch's legal action that they were taking against some of the most active sellers of ViewBots, which are, of course, software used to make Twitch streams appear to have more viewers than they actually do. Have actually been found guilty. And so basically Twitch is now due $1.3 million.
Wow.
From bot makers Michael and Catherine Anjomi. This case was venued in California, and the judge ruled in Twitch's favor on grounds of trademark infringement, unfair competition, breach of contract, and violation of the Anti-Cyber Squad and Consumer Protection Act.
Wow, they're going to lose their yacht or something.
Maybe. With all of that having been said, we do have one more thing for you before we deep dive a small handful of news stories, as we tend to do on these news-centric episodes. This is in the form of a smash hit article that was listener-submitted by our friend Anthony over at the Nintendo Love Fest. Slaggy, do you want to talk about this article a little bit?
Yeah, so this is an interesting history, or kind of, you know, historical perspective over on Waypoint about the way that Police Quest Open Season from Sierra kind of came to be. And, you know, it's kind of looking at, you know, in the light of the 1992 Los Angeles riots. It's just, you know, I mean, I admittedly was a little bit young. I remember, you know, the LA riots, but not super well. But basically, you know, how Ken Williams over at Sierra brought in Daryl Gates, who, you know, was controversially involved in the, you know, the Rodney King riots. So it's just, you know, as we expect from Waypoint, you know, just a really interesting, you know, deep dive in looking at about how that kind of came to be.
Yeah, you know, this whole article is really fascinating because it's a deep dive on sort of the history of Sierra Online, but it also touches really strongly and focuses on, again, you know, a certain culture of police violence that really lends itself to queer phobia, violence, murder, and, you know, sort of how that relates to Sierra's depiction of the characterizations of Police Quest, and specifically how, you know, the police departments in Police Quest are represented. You know, I actually found this to be a fascinating read. Anthony has been asking me if we would ever consider doing a Sierra Entertainment episode, Sierra Online Entertainment, or all of the very many names that they've been known as. And this article actually really made me want to do that. It kind of makes me want to dig up a bunch of those old classics and revisit them. So we may do that at some point, but if you're looking for a really great piece of video games journalism, definitely check this one out. It's over on Waypoint via Vice. Definitely worth your time. So we have a handful of news stories here that we would like to talk a little more in depth about. And this first one, Slaggy, I would really like you to dig into. This is involving a new product announcement that Nintendo made earlier this month for a product that we'll be releasing on April 20th this year.
Yes, so this is one that a lot of people did not expect at all. I was definitely surprised. You might be familiar with Google Cardboard, you know, which allows you to put an Android phone, or I think really, I don't even think it has to necessarily be Android, but I mean, I know that's what they would want you to use, to like have a like little cheap VR headset. Well, kind of on a similar note, Nintendo has announced Nintendo Labo. And this is a cardboard peripheral construction kit program that they're launching that will allow you to basically make interactive peripherals and toys that combine with the Switch. So there are two kits that are announced known as Toy-Con. Toy-Con 1 is the variety kit, and Toy-Con 2 is the robot kit. Toy-Con 1 variety kit will cost $16.99 at retail. We'll have the ability to make two RC cars, a fishing rod, a house, a motorbike, and a piano, and a robot kit has a robot suit. So, you know, this is a really interesting direction for Nintendo to go in, but a lot of people are like, oh, LOL, this seems dumb, but for me, it really goes back to, like, the spirit of what got Nintendo into video games in the first place. You know, when Gunpei Yokoi-san had, you know, made all types of toys and gadgets for Nintendo, I think this is exactly in the same spirit of that. Like, you know, there was the Love Tester and, like, the Claw and everything. So, I mean, Nintendo, you know, aside from the playing cards, really had a lot of success in the toy market. So, I mean, a lot of people I saw a lot of, you know, eye rolling at this, but I mean, I think that anything that encourages, like, you know, creativity and engineering and that sort of thing is, of course, great. And I mean, I know people are also saying, oh, well, this is for kids. I'm like, I want some Toy-Con, like the Toy-Con piano. That looks super cool.
Right. So I have to say, first off, and full disclosure here, I am going to be buying both Toy-Con 1 and Toy-Con 2. I am more excited for Toy-Con 2 because the actual robot game looks like it plays like a casual version of like Virtual On, and I am super, super here for that. But in fact, not only am I that excited about it, I'm actually going to be taking the day off that day specifically so I can get my Toy-Con and play with the Labo stuff. But I have to say, something I'm noticing is a lot of people really coming for Nintendo over this. You know, oh, this looks terrible. It's for kids. Why are they making this? Obviously, we just want more games. Where's my Smash? I don't really think, especially with Nintendo, that the existence of these kinds of products means that the products that the quote-unquote hardcore gamers are looking for is going to suddenly not exist. Like, we're definitely going to get a new Smash Brothers at some point, whether Labo exists or not. What this is Nintendo attempting to turn video games into a positive influence in the real world. I think that's something we should all be applauding regardless of where we are. Video games should be more than collecting guns and killing things. If Nintendo is going to make video games that can help children with their fine motor skills, help them develop their cognitive thinking process, encourage them into, you know, STEM fields as they grow older because they grew a love of engineering by developing creating their own, you know, crawling bug kits using their Joy-Con and pad as a remote control that they were able to make roam around their house as kids. Like, that's a great thing. That's a positive thing. That is immeasurably valuable to the video game community. That Nintendo specifically called it out as, you know, oh, this is an announcement we're making for kids and families and those young at heart. Like, they were basically getting out in front of it and saying, you know, this might not be for you. And that's okay. I don't understand where we all got so crazy that we stopped acknowledging that some things just aren't for us, and that's okay.
Yeah.
If you're a Labo complainer and you're listening to this show, honestly, take a minute and ask yourself, why does this infuriate me? Because honestly, I would really like to know the answer to that.
I'd rather Nintendo put money so that Zelda could be on my PS4 Pro.
Yeah. I think, you know, this is super exciting. I think that, you know, it's going to open up a ton of new ideas and experiments and silly weirdness that we can have with our consoles. I'm excited for that because I love experimentation and silly weirdness. It's going to help kids. I mean, to me, it's just a win-win-win. I'm really super excited about this. I think it is brilliant. And I think Nintendo, I think this is probably closer to why Nintendo thinks they can sell 20 million plus Switches this year rather other than any new Pokemon or any new software game could. This, to me, is what's going to drive Nintendo Switch in 2018. But I still think we're also going to get a ton of killer software, which is why I really do believe in those earlier indications that really they're looking to sell 30 million and 20 is their conservative estimate.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they had a huge success with Amiibo. So, I mean, you know, I think that, you know, now we have Totaku, which isn't even have NFC functionality or anything. But, you know, I was wondering, like, you know, I figured that, you know, they weren't going to try to go for, like, Super 4K gaming or VR. I was like, you know, what is Nintendo going to try to do next? And, you know, I didn't expect Labo to be coming so soon. But I think this is, like, their way of, you know, kind of, you know, branching out and enhancing the experience.
Yeah. I, again, you know, I just don't understand why some people want video games to be more limited rather than more expansive. Why shouldn't we want this to grow, to see?
Oh, because it's a $70 piece of cardboard.
You know, and that's even, the funny thing is, it's so offensive because I keep seeing people talk about $70 piece of cardboard. But, like, Nintendo has literally said that they are going to release schematics for the cardboard open source so that you can, like, just use cardboard around your house. But you won't have the software to run the game. Like, yeah, you're still going to have to buy the software. Software and this kind of stuff, there are development costs involved. Like, you're not just buying the materials, you're buying into this whole process and package. Like, if you're going to denounce this as $70 cardboard, then how are you not denouncing Horizon Zero Dawn as a $60 plastic disc? Like, y'all haters are corny, okay? That's all I could really say. Like, y'all are just looking to attack something for being different. It is no different than what happened with the Wii, and I am very disappointed in y'all.
Yeah.
Ooh-wee, she done had herses. So, I also want to talk here a little bit. We have an interview with producer Masaru Oyamada-san from IGN. This is in regards to the upcoming Secret of Mana remake for PS4 and PS Vita. And, Oyamada-san actually had some really interesting things to say about the Nintendo Switch. On the likelihood of the Secret of Mana remake coming to the Switch, he basically said that, you know, they were working on the remake before the Switch was announced, but there has been quite a bit of demand for a Switch version, so they're looking into seeing what they can do. There just currently isn't a plan. To me, the fact that they're talking about it means there actually probably is a plan, they're just not ready to confirm it yet. Slaggy, what do you think on that? And there are multiple talking points here, but I want to do one at a time.
Yeah, I mean, like we talked about, the Switch is really the perfect platform for some of these, you know, arguably more niche Square Enix titles, so I'm optimistic.
Yeah, me too. You know, they also discussed the possibility of Seiken Densetsu Collection, and specifically Seiken Densetsu 3 coming out in English worldwide. And it's really exciting to me because Oyamada-san actually acknowledged that there is a very high demand for Seiken Densetsu 3 in the world wide stage, so they do want to consider it. But they acknowledge that, you know, that if they were to do something like that, there would be hurdles to overcome because the development environment is so different now. But he does acknowledge, you know, they're actually actively thinking about this. They do want to figure out a resolution. They just don't have an announcement for this time. This is probably the closest thing we've ever gotten to a tease or a clue that we're going to be getting Seiken Densetsu 3 in English at some point. For some of us, we've been waiting for this for, you know, 20 plus years. It's actually kind of really exciting, even if it's not quite enough to hang our hat on yet. I'd like to ask Slaggy, what do you think? Any thoughts on Seiken Densetsu 3 and possibly the Seiken Densetsu Collection actually getting an English language release?
I mean, you know, I never really spent a lot of time with the Seiken Densetsu series, but, you know, I know that they're really well-loved, and, I mean, I feel like they would sell, so I feel like this would be a big deal, but then again, you know, Mother 3, like, you know, I mean, not that's not Square Enix, but, you know, look at something like Mother 3, which people have been clamoring for, so it's kind of, you know, who knows?
Absolutely, and the last news here in this article that I would like to touch up on is word that they would also like to be doing the next Seiken Densetsu game, specifically calling out that the reason why they're doing all of these remakes and collections and releases is to not just remind older gamers about these games, but to bring younger gamers into play so that they have more of an audience for these games. So it definitely sounds like the interest is on continuing to grow the Seiken Densetsu franchise.
Hey, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely. The Secret of Mana remake will be releasing on PS4, PS Vita, and PC on February 15th. No word yet on a Switch port, but it sounds to me like a matter of time. We also have word here that Nintendo will be ending service of the app Miitomo on May 9th, 2018. This, of course, means that it will have been in service for about 2 years. It launched back in March of 2016. Nintendo is no longer going to be selling Miitomo coins, but the game is now offering huge daily login bonuses of coins so that people who love the game can continue doing their Miitomo drop in their Miitomo shop until the end of service in May.
And that's nice.
It is nice. You know, something that kind of sucks is that Miis in Miitomo obviously had a lot more customization options than the regular Miis did. Previously, they had been able to be transferred to your Nintendo account while carrying over all the cool customizations. Unfortunately, a lot of that stuff is not going to be carried over any further, which means we're losing a lot of that stuff. After service has ended, your Nintendo account and your Super Mario Run game will no longer display the special Miitomo swag. All of the in-app stuff that you were able to export, like wallpapers, you know, for your phone, you'll be able to keep those on your phone, but you'll no longer be able to access them in-app. It sounds like they're tearing it all down hard and permanently come May 9th. Obviously, there are a lot of people speculating that it's because the game hasn't kept up user engagement, and as a result, you know, the app is just not really serving a lot of purpose if you don't have a lot of people active in it, answering questions, participating in events. Well, what's your take, Slaggy?
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, you know, this was kind of their first foray into mobile, and it's not surprising to see that, you know, it was kind of an experiment. It wasn't really a full-fledged thing. And, I mean, for me, it was always kind of LOL Miitomo, but I've seen a lot of people who have continued to enjoy it. I have some friends on Twitter who post really cute little Miitomo screenshots, like, you know, a couple times a week. So I'm going to miss that.
I still see that stuff pretty regularly on some of my timelines, too, and I'm also going to miss it.
And, you know, I hope that maybe this can be worked into, like, a future update for the Switch, or, you know, even just the, like, you know, the Nintendo app or whatever it is. You know, like, the Mii photos were a really cute thing, so this seems like it could be, like, it seems like something, like, at least the, you know, like, Mii photos part would be something really easy to add for something like Switch, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Fingers crossed, truly. We also have word that the Tales of series smartphone spinoff Tales of Link is going to be coming to an end in March. This is actually kind of interesting because this game's actually been going since March of 2014. So that's really interesting. This game's been going for so long that, you know, it's finally ending. Microtransaction purchases are going to be taken down in February on the 26th, and then the game will officially end on March 28th. Do you have any thoughts on that, Slaggy?
No, I mean, you know, I think we're just kind of starting to see these mobile games start to slow down a little bit, and really the focus being more on ones that are going to have, you know, more of a lasting appeal. But again, it's really hard to predict. I mean, you know, we have Fire Emblem Heroes continuing to do really well, but who knows? It can kind of just be at the whim of the consumer, really, so.
Absolutely. We also have here a news story. This is from an IGN interview with Monster Hunter World directors Kaname Fujioka-san and Tuya Tokuda-san, who basically talked about, like, quite a few things. Some of these are actually really interesting. They noted that their dream collaboration would actually be Arthas from World of Warcraft, specifically the Lich King from Wrath of the Lich King, which is obviously super fascinating. How would you feel about that, Slaggy? Would that get you more into Monster Hunter if you could fight Arthas there?
That would be interesting. I was like, wait a minute, who's Arthas? And I'm like, oh, translation error.
You know, they noted that they had intentionally brought the bowgun controls a little more in line with sort of the norm of what's expected from AAA shooters, which I thought was interesting. They talked about how, you know, they added options to make the game more accessible, especially to worldwide gamers, while still keeping controls the same for people who loved them. The citations in this article article or interview are specifically how, you know, like most Monhun games, you run using the R1 button, but you can also click in the left stick, like almost Call of Duty style, in order to run that way. So rather than, you know, they added options rather than changing things. I thought that was actually a really good way to do that.
Well, yeah, because people who want it to play more like a, you know, all the other Monhun games, they still have that option.
Oh, exactly. And I'm going to talk a bit about this when we get to my What's Up, but I'm about 10 hours into Monhun, which is a lot since it's only been out for 48 hours.
And it's a, you know, PS4, Xbox One game.
Yeah, I'm not playing it on my Switch or whatever. Like, no, I was up all damn night Friday. Like, I had so much fun. But I actually think Capcom finally nailed that, you know, make Monster Hunter accessible without sacrificing what made it special. And for those of you who have been listening to this show, that for me was a huge, huge concern. And I'm actually shocked, frankly, that Capcom nailed it, but they did. You know, they also noted that Tsujimoto-san over at Capcom, who is a producer on the Monhun series, he's typically the one who approaches other companies to see if they want to do collaborations. And they noted that Guerrilla Games was very positive on collaborating with Monster Hunter. They're the ones who are behind Horizon Zero Dawn, and they actually felt that Monster Hunter, having been a big inspiration for them, like, this was a good match. So that's definitely an interesting insight, both into Horizon and the process of how these collaborations work. But the one I want to kind of dig in the most is that Fujioka-san and Tokuda-san were asked why Monster Hunter World isn't coming to the Switch. And they had noted, you know, that they didn't have plans for the game for Switch at the moment because Monster Hunter World began development about 4 years ago, before the Switch was even announced. So at the time, they just took the game to, you know, where the concept for it could be best realized. That being said, you know, like a world-spanning Monster Hunter experience. So they went to the current-gen consoles to do that. I did know, you know, they were kind of cagey about confirming whether a Switch port will come, whether there will be a Switch, like, portable spin-off, which I think is what a lot of people are maybe expecting. I'd like to get your take. What do you think about that? About the, where does the Switch fit into the Monster Hunter future?
Oh, I'm sure we're gonna get a Monster Hunter for Switch. It's just not gonna be World. I think that will probably, you know, it's possible that, you know, this might be bad news for other Capcom franchises, but we might start to see more World style games on, you know, continue on the bigger consoles, and then, you know, the next more traditional one being on the Switch.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've actually heard that theory a lot. And funny enough, I'd actually be kind of into that. Like, very similar to how when Monster Hunter Tri came out on the Wii, and then Monster Hunter, or PSP still got Monster Hunter Portable 3rd, which was, you know, basically like the classic style Monster Hunter gameplay without any of, like, the newfangled swimming or whatever, but set in the Monster Hunter 3 world or areas and with those monsters. We'll probably be talking a lot more about this kind of stuff in the next week or two, but there's precedent for what you're talking about is basically my point. So I definitely think that's a viable option. It is kind of the one I expect them to take, and I think it's the best way that they could continue selling both Monster Hunter on the consoles and Monster Hunter on the portables.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely a lot of opportunity there. Slaggy, this last one, I would like you to take because it's so near and dear to your heart in so many ways.
Oh, yeah. I was hoping we could just pretend this wasn't happening. So the funny thing is, I actually first saw this as like a sponsored ad on social media. It's for Atari Game Partners asking you to be an investor to bring Roller Coaster Tycoon to the Nintendo Switch. So basically, this just rubs me the wrong way in a lot of ways. First of all, it's based off the shitty mobile version that Roller Coaster Tycoon, not World, that was the flop from the from last year for the PC. But, you know, that shitty free-to-play microtransaction one for smartphones, it's basically based off of that.
Cool.
And then my thing is like, this whole language of, we're looking for investors. If you're going to crowdfund, call it what it is and put it up on Kickstarter. But instead, they're like, just the whole language of it sounds out of touch. Like, we're looking for investors, blah, blah, blah. I guess the difference is that you get to get some profit from it. So I guess that is kind of different.
Yeah, the profit share aspect, I think, is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's still overall just kind of of leaves a sour taste in my mouth, personally.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, that game was Roller Coaster Tycoon Touch, but it's going to be developed by Envizio Creations, who were responsible for Roller Coaster Tycoon World. I'm glad that Planet Coaster is a thing and continuing to get lots of great content that, you know, hopefully Parkitect will be, you know, in full release at some point soon. I kind of haven't really followed their development, but, you know, they're going for the, you know, the more classic gameplay. Because as we talked about on our focus episode on theme park games, just really sad state that Roller Coaster Tycoon is in.
Yeah, took the words right out of my mouth. This is just messy. But I do think it's a fascinating look at how more firms are trying to utilize crowdsourcing. So that's, you know, very interesting. All right, well, all that having been said, it starts...
Apparently, Parkitect is now in beta. You know, it's been in alpha and in early access for a long time, so apparently now in beta. So,
ooh, exciting.
Looks like it's really coming along.
As a backer, that one is very near and dear to my heart. All right, well, all that having been said, it's time to start winding down by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
I'm going to go first this week. I've done a lot of gaming since our last episode. The first game I want to talk about, of course, Monster Hunter World. I picked it up Friday. I actually had to go pick it up after work. If I had done a digital pre-order, I might have ended up calling out sick, and I was specifically trying not to do that. As it is, the temptation was strong, though, you know, I got to say. But no, I was good. I went to work. I got all my work done, left a little late, as expected and usual. But I did end up picking up the game. I got my day one copy with its special steelbook case, which is gorgeous. And putting in, you know, 10 plus hours in it already, I'm really taken aback by the fact that Capcom nailed it. They really did take Monster Hunter and create a new generation experience. It feels every bit as expansive as Tri felt upon going to the Tri generation from the DOS generation. It feels every bit as expansive as 4 did coming from Tri. It just feels like the next step in evolution for Monster Hunter. Still has that patented Monster Hunter jank that those of us are looking for while we're doing our doot doots and what have you. It's just really, really something very special. And I'm actually like stunned at how good it is, because I also know a lot of people who bought it expecting to get like a Zelda type game or a Horizon Zero Dawn type game. But I also know a lot of people who had previously tried to get into Monster Hunter and just couldn't quite do it. And for those people, this is perfect. They're finally getting into it. They're finally advancing into, you know, higher ranks, and I'm really loving seeing people be so successful at it. I'm having a blast playing with my friends. I'm really looking forward to playing with Slagkick here in studio after he picks it up. Just super, super excited that Monster Hunter World has turned out to be far beyond what I thought it was, and I am happy to eat my hat on that one. I also want to talk a little bit about Dragon Ball FighterZ. I've put less time in on FighterZ, as it only came out Thursday night. That one I did get digitally, though, so at least I was able to play it Thursday night, played it a little bit here over the weekend, showed it off to Slagkick. First off, Slagkick, what did you think of FighterZ as a someone who is maybe aware of and into watching fighting games, but maybe not like a big like member of the fighting game community?
I mean, it looks really solid. You know, for me as a Dragon Ball fan, it looks really cool and cinematic. It reminds me, just as a viewer, a lot of a cross between, you know, something like a Blaze Blue or Guilty Gear with a Marvel vs. Capcom, you know, with the assist characters,
yeah,
particularly. So.
And that's actually kind of exactly what it is.
So, I mean, I can't speak to how it's balanced or how it feels like with the physics, but it looks really cool to watch.
Excellent. And, you know, I know you dabble occasionally in fighting games on a casual level. Do you think I'll be able to get you to pick up a Player 2 controller at some point?
Oh, a Player 2 controller, sure. I don't know if I would go out and, you know, buy this on my own just because I'm not a big fighting game player, but no, I would dabble.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. You know, I'm obviously not playing it at a high level. I could see myself getting there. Like, it's definitely the kind of game where I definitely could see myself going and playing ranked online like I used to do for Killer Instinct and did for UMVC3 for a while. I could definitely see myself dabbling there. I think that the game is incredibly well designed. It's one I'd actually like to do a focus episode on soon, just because as a fighter, I think it's probably the most accessible, like, current-gen fighting game we have. And again, you know, there's that word accessibility, something that I think I used to view really negatively, but I've really come to see as an asset as I get older and understand what it's like to not be able to devote my entire life to games. I've also been playing Celeste on the Switch. That one just came out last week. Been playing it on all of my commutes. I've actually found it incredibly fun. It's funny because a lot of people were hyping up like the super hard level design similar to like the Super Meat Boy games, but I'm actually not finding it to be very challenging, except when I'm trying to do like a total completionist run, which is how I play games. But if I were just trying to progress, I actually don't think it would be that hard. It would just be really fun and almost like a action platform puzzler, which you, Psychic, actually think would probably get a lot out
right,
of.
And you know, I'm hearing a lot of people talking about how it also, similar to some of the games we talked about last year, deals with issues of mental health, which I didn't realize that was even an aspect of it. So I think that's just really, you know, another possible Games for Change nominee for the Games Award this year or something.
Absolutely. And then the last game I want to talk about is an older release on iOS. This is Battle of Polytopia. It is also available on Android. This is basically a phone version of a Civ-type game, but it's like, what if you played a miniature Civ that was just limited to, like, 60 turns? Like, how far could you advance that Civ in 60 turns? Yeah, it's really cute. It's a lot of fun. Before Celeste, I had gotten back into this, and it was kind of like my favorite time waster on my commutes for the early part of the last few weeks. It's just that now I have Celeste, and that's kind of my focus. But definitely something I would suggest if you're into those kinds of experiences and you just have a need for a phone game that you can play from start to end in about 5 minutes.
All right. Wow.
Yeah. Slaggy, you in particular would get a lot out of it, and it's a free game, so you're not losing anything. There is DLC as far as, like, expansion civs. They each start with, like, a different spot on the tech tree, so that you could start with a civ that maybe has the strengths that you like from round one, rather than having to build toward it on the tech tree. But no, it's a very authentic 4X experience on, like, a micro scale. It's really cool.
Cute.
Anyway, what about you, Slaggy? What have you been playing?
I'm gonna keep it quick, because lately, my biggest focus has been World of Warcraft, interestingly.
I've been playing WoW too, but go on.
Yeah, you know, the 7.3.5 patch just hit, and with that came not any of the new allied races or, like, profession changes or item level squish that's coming in Battle for Azeroth at some point this year, presumably, but it did have the zone scaling changes, and it's been really interesting to experience that. I've been playing Horde characters, mostly a Fire Mage, a Blood Elf Fire Mage, and, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that, oh, you know, it really slows down the gameplay, that that because things scale up to your level now, that things take forever to die, where you used to be able to, you know, just go and one-shot them as you got, you know, kind of outgrew the content. But I mean, for me, I've basically only gone through 3 zones since, you know, starting at level 1. So played through the story of 3 zones and then queuing up for dungeons while I'm questing. And, you know, I mean, sure, maybe with the, because they did increase how much experience it takes again, which I feel like is one of the first times they've done that. Usually, you know, they decrease it. But now I guess they, you know, really wanted, they thought it maybe they had overdone it or whatever. But I mean, still, I'm like level 40-something. I'm having a lot of fun, and the fact that the like the zones still start at their minimum level that they used to, but then they scale up to, you know, in the old world, 60, so that you'll be able to you know, continue through a zone without being like, oh, well, the quests aren't optimal experience, or, you know, like, you know, I've got to hop all over the world to get, you know, the most bang for my buck. And I mean, for me, it's more a more enjoyable leveling experience. It'll be interesting once I hit 60, and then you can, you know, hop around between Outland and Wrath of the Lich King, because that's where I think it's going to really be more noticeable, where I can be like, oh, I'm only level 60, but I'm going to go to Howling Fjord, you know? So that's kind of where some of the minimum level ranges change, is starting in that. So I'm looking forward to that. Having a lot of fun playing a Fire Mage. It's a spec that I've never really dabbled in a lot. And Yeah, I mean, for someone who had really gotten big time into Final Fantasy XIV, which I, you know, still enjoy, I wasn't sure how I would enjoy going back to WoW, but I feel like, you know, both those games do certain things really well, and, you know, there's a reason why, you know, WoW set the standard, and so I'm just looking forward to kind of catching up on, you know, some of the stuff that some of the stories and zones that I never really got to see. And that's about it for right now, so I guess it's time to go over to our social links. As always, you can tweet us at GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
We're over on Facebook at Facebook.com/GameBuoy.
We are over on Facebook at Facebook.com/GameBuoy.
And you can mail us at MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org!
We had a little conversation going over on Twitter about the Overwatch League and kind of some of the problems, but that was kind of more just where GameBuoy kind of got tagged in. So a bit of a nice little discussion going over there about, you know, kind of just some of the stuff going on. But as far as the show proper, we have a tweet from Twitter user The Solar Bear, and they said, catching up on episodes and all about Daddy Spike Point 30 voice.
I just have to say, I love that all of y'all out there totally went to in on Slagkick's joke about commenting about this. That having been said, the Solar Bear is totally one of my faves, and I'm so happy that you're listening.
I don't think people are joking. Not joking, bitch. Well, with that, I think it's time to wrap things up. So, we love your feedback. We love your iTunes subscription ratings and reviews, as well as Stitcher Radio, Google Play, whatever they're calling those these days. I guess it's Apple Podcasts or whatever, but, you know, it's iTunes. It's the same thing. We told you where you can reach us on social media. We're over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And we would be nothing without you and your support and, you know, the podcasting community out there. So, Spike, can you start out the shout-outs?
The support of listeners and podcasters like you. Of course, first I'd like to shout out to the Voice of Geeks Network over at VogNetwork.com, where you can hear such shows as Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO, Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal so many of my cues. The Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. And the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as their sister show X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. Neither of those shows are on the VOG network, but you know what show should be? The Astral Era podcast. Astral Era is a Final Fantasy XIV podcast focused on in-depth discussion of new content, game mechanics, story/lore, music, and of course, glamour, darling. You can also hear more of myself and Slagkick, as well as Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio and Delvin from VG Realness, over on Reading is Fundamental, the seasonal show where we talk about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race. As that show is currently in season, so too is Reading is Fundamental. We're having a lot of fun over there, and you should definitely check it out. We will be recording the next episode tomorrow night, so last night by the time you're hearing this, possibly earlier. Slaggy, take us a place.
So, what are you? Are we doing weird voices for the shoutouts now?
Is I don't know what you're talking about.
It's kind of all over the place there. I'd like to shout out to Game Bar, where you can kick back and listen to the sassy staccato of Jeremiah, Toops, and Todd. I'd also like to shout out to the other members of the Hunty Bunch, which include Video Game Realness, serving up a gaming chit-chat dose for you among friends. The Magical Boys podcast, a pop culture podcast from a queer perspective, and our allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, and the kittens Yuna and Luna. I'd also like to shout out to our sister ship shows, Anime Buoy, which is your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be, and Stabcast, the same type attack bonus podcast, or Stabcast for short, over at Stabcast.org, your twice-monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon that Spike and I do with Trainer Sulker. Also, I'd like to honor our wonderful, beautiful theme music, which was done by Zelda Reorchestrated. Zelda Reorchestrated was a project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous Georgia Symphonic Sound. They unfortunately closed their doors quite a while back. You know, they'll be remembered in our Temple of Time and will be pouring out a potion into the Great Fairy Fountain.
Excellent, excellent. All right, well, it has been a lovely Sunday night speaking to all of y'all out there in Internet Radio Land. We will be back at you, if all goes to plan, in about a week talking about Monster Hunter as a series. I'm very, very excited to get back to one of our focus/feature/retrospective episodes. So, please look forward to it, and until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And, see you, Space Palico.
Perfect.
I can't believe I got through that entire Labo conversation without bringing up the robotic operating buddy. That's been the point I've been on, like, for the last 2 weeks nonstop.
I thought you were going to bring up your desire for Nintendo Labo, the lab mascot.
Oh my gosh, right?
And then they can be friends with the Joy-Con puppy.
Yes, get them as, like, assist trophies in Smash 4DX or something.
Well, I think they are merchandisable all by pupselves.